Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Young Bucks, your Pittsburgh Pirates prospects podcast of choice. I'm joined today not by Corey Geiger, sorry to disappoint, but I'm joined by John Moses, Director of Broadcasting and Communications with the Altoona Curve, who helps Corey and I out on a weekly basis. So I figured in Corey's absence, he's camping, we might as well have John on, and I think he's going to be an admirable replacement for us this week. So John, tell us how you are. We're recording this on a Monday, the permanent off day for minor league baseball. Obviously that's a sigh of relief this time of year.
I mean, I am definitely not as good as Corey Geiger, who is definitely camping right now. I almost struggle to envision Corey Geiger at a campsite, much less sleeping in a tent overnight for several nights in a row. So I am very interested to see his return.
Yes, I'm very excited to hear all about his camping with his family. So let's get straight to it. Andy Rodriguez gets called up from Greensboro and started off very, very hot. Obviously, the Curve were on the road last week, so we haven't gotten to see him in Altoona yet. But what's the early look for him look like? Like, what have you seen from him so far?
It's an exciting player, man. Switch hitter. I was talking to Blake Butler, one of our coaches, before he took the field for the first time. And, just from the way Blake was talking about him, it was clear how much the organization thinks highly of him. He described a almost flawless swing from both sides of the plate, which sort of caught my attention that, normally a guy that young, Andy's only 22, doesn't have, might still have some things he has to work through mechanically in terms of his swing. But from what Blake was talking about, and then from what we observed for, five games last week in Binghamton, he's a really exciting player. I think he does a really nice job blocking the baseball. He caught Priester, I want to say, on Thursday. Quinn had a couple of breaking balls that he sort of spiked in front of home plate. And those are always sort of an indicator for me, like how a catcher handles those. And Andy was all over it, kept those in front, didn't let them trickle away one side or the other. He certainly looks like a guy who's going to hit for average and for power. The home run he hit on Sunday was probably 25 or 30 feet above the right field foul pole. He was able just to keep it inside the line. So, sort of a really high, majestic drive down the right field line. So it's a pretty exciting profile. I'm looking forward to seeing more of him, man.
Now, he's not going to catch every day. Isn't that right? Is that correct?
I mean, it remains to be seen. We saw Sable catch the first day and Andy DH'd, and I would assume that there's going to be probably about an even split between those guys, or maybe it's 4 days for Andy and two for Blake. I don't really know. And, look, the catching thing's going to get a little more complicated when Henry Davis comes back. I don't know how you find three guys to play every day behind the plate, because all three of them need to play behind the plate. So, that'll be an interesting conversation for the coaching staff to have. And, I wonder if all three of those guys end up on the active roster together. We'll see. you know, once Henry's ready to come back off the injured list.
Well, that's the thing with Andy Rodriguez is he's a versatile player in the field. He's played a multitude of different positions in both Bradenton and Greensboro. So there are a lot of options for the Curve coaching staff to come up with and put, you know, put that best lineup on the field. Is that correct?
For sure. You know, but I think, you know, if the question is, what is this guy going to do in the big leagues? What are we developing him for? Then, you know, I think it's the same answer for all three guys that we're talking about, Rodriguez, Davis, and Sable, is that you have to catch them on a regular basis, because with what those guys can do with the bat, if they're able to develop into average defensive catchers, then you're talking about a highly valuable player. And you want to put each of those three guys in a position where they can get better every day.
Right. And that's the difficult part of this part of the year, because you've got call-ups, you've got all kinds of different things, and all pieces and parts coming back and going. And it's hard to get guys like that significant playing time or constant playing time, which is ultimately, you know, how you get better, right? You're not going to get any better if you're sitting on the bench. Obviously you go through BP, you go through your infield, outfield, but to really get better, you've got to be on the field and in game situations.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, this is not the first time that Altoona's coaching staff has had to sort of manage multiple guys for only a certain number of spots. Remember opening the outfield this year with Lolo Sanchez and Matt Frazier and Connor Scott and Jack Sawinski together on the opening day roster. You know, and still Blake Sable obviously was here and he was catching and DHing, you know, where you sort of had four guys for three spots. You know, the coaching staff, I think, did a pretty admirable job the first couple weeks of the season of making sure those guys got the proper number of reps each day. And then, you know, obviously Sawinski ended up spending like 3.5 months in the big leagues. So that sort of solved that, that log jam with us. Yeah, it'll be interesting. And, you know, I'm sure we'll garner a lot of conversation coming up here in the next couple of weeks for Pirates player development folks.
Before we get into the second segment, because we're going to be talking about the returns of a bunch of different players, how difficult is it to manage a roster like that? Because you've got numerous parts and pieces going kind of all over the place. I mean, at certain points, you know, you have Sawinski that gets called up, stays up, right? And not that many people expected that, and maybe they did. Then you have a guy like Peguero gets sent up and sent back down, and you've got different players going here, different players going there. How hard that is it to manage for the coaching staff of the Curve?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, you know, that's gotta be something that they're thinking about. I think if I were in their shoes, that would be one of the first things that goes through my mind each day when the lineup is being made. You know, it's like, okay, this is the group this is the group of 27 or 28 for today. We know this for sure. And, you know, if something's going to happen in the future, then we'll deal with it then. But, you know, I think it's probably done through a lot of conversation. You know, I know our coaching staff does sort of a lengthy meeting after games each day to unpack every element of the day from, you know, each staff member, and that includes everybody, athletic trainer, strength coach, dietitian, everybody that's involved, you know, where they sort of unpack the day and they talk through, you know, anything that they saw that, you know, maybe they want to address tomorrow or in another place or with another meeting. You know, I that's one thing I really enjoy about this coaching staff that I've had to work with here in Altoona is that they seem really connected with each other. And a lot of it comes from, I think, some of those post-game meetings where, you know, they're fleshing out all of these different scenarios and they're constantly, you know, working to be in the same lockstep with each other.
No, and I think that's hugely important, especially this year. It seems that there have just been so many different transactions and roster moves. It seems like we're getting something different every day because this is not the same. And Corey and I have mentioned this countless times. This is not the same roster that was expected to be in Altoona. And I think that's something that you have to take into account too, because so many things have changed, both good, bad, and indifferent. And here we are.
Yeah. You know, this has been a pretty interesting journey for this group. Obviously, the Tucupita Marcano and Sawinski promotions in April, you know, coming on short notice when we're going to Akron, you know, what feels like a laundry list of injuries over the course of the season. You know, I would understand if there was an element of frustration amongst people. And, you know, I've certainly felt an element of frustration over the course of the year where it's like, I would love to see all these guys on the field together at the same time, man. Like, we're talking about like an incredible group of talented players in Altoona. And, you know, we never really sort of got to see that, pardon the Star Wars reference, like a fully operational Death Star lineup of, you know, Gorski, Sanchez, Frazier together in the outfield with Triolo, Peguero, Gonzalez, Shackelford, and Sable, the DH, and Henry Davis behind the plate, and Quinn Priester on the mound, right? Like, we haven't seen sort of the best 9-10 man group that I think we were all expecting to see on a regular basis this year.
Right. So we're going to talk about some of those guys that were supposed to be mainstays in the Curve lineup here when we get to the second segment of the Young Bucks podcast on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
It's only a kick. A jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome back to the second segment of the Young Bucks podcast on the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. I'm Jared Pruger, and I'm alongside John Moses, Director of Broadcasting Communications for the Altoona Curve. He is your play-by-play guy during these games. So he's got a front row seat. Well, maybe not front row. It's pretty high up there, depending on the stadium. But Henry Davis has taken swings, according to his Instagram. Nick Gonzalez is back. The Curve are getting back to this. You mentioned this in the first segment, this fully operational Death Star, and they've got some big hitters that are already there too. So first, how has Nick Gonzalez looked since returning from the IL?
Yeah, I think, you know, his first two games were, you know, a little bit looked like a guy who hadn't played in like 3 months. You know, he had good at bats. He hit the ball hard a couple times, and he looked great defensively, made a couple nice plays going up the middle. I think in the first game back, whatever that was, Friday or Saturday. I'm very excited to see Nick at his best, because the last 2-3 weeks before he went on the injured list in May, it seemed like he had figured some things out and was starting to hit the ball with more authority. And, you know, it felt like he was really close to breaking out. And I think the numbers sort of indicate that, right? He was hitting probably right around 190 or 200 at the end of April and was up to 250-ish by the time he hit the injured list at the end of May. You know, so things had started to sort of hit the ground for him. And look, he's an exciting player, man. I just want to see more of him. You know, I'm disappointed that we missed out on what that ended up being 2.5 months without Gonzalez. So, you know, I'm just looking forward to the next 6 weeks with him here. This should be fun to see him at his best.
Well, and I think this is going to solidify the Curve up the middle for the what seems like the remainder of the season, because now you're going to get Peguero at short and Gonzalez at second. Now, of course, there are going to be rest days and things in there, but now you get that double play tandem that has a lot of chemistry on the field and all over the place together. I mean, you see them on Instagram you know, in the locker room together and stuff like that. So that chemistry means something and it is valuable on the field.
100%. And I will say that I think that was Wednesday when they first arrived with us when we were in Binghamton. And then, you know, they just sort of went through the workday on Thursday and they got activated Friday. It felt like the vibes changed. You know, obviously the Curve hadn't been playing well coming into that series last week at Binghamton, and then they win 6-0 on Tuesday night. And then Nick and Lolo arrived together at the same car service right before the game on Wednesday. And just getting on the bus on Thursday, you know, there was just more energy around the team. You know, I think those two guys in particular are very well liked by their teammates, and, you know, they have, you know, some pretty in-depth relationships with members of the coaching staff, because obviously it's a lot of the same coaches they had last year in Greensboro. There were just a lot more smiles going on. You know, it didn't feel like we were around a team that had lost 12 of 15 coming out of the All-Star break. And by the time the week wrapped up in Binghamton, you know, it sort of felt like the end of May when the team was turning the corner and getting ready to do some damage for the end of the first half.
How important is it for guys like Gonzalez and Lolo Sanchez to come back and have an immediate impact, not just on the field, but off the field for a team? Because it's early August, right? Almost middle of August. I guess we could say it's the middle of August. This is the 15th. Every day kind of runs together for me at this point in the season. But these are the dog days of the summer. How important is it to finally get that life, that rejuvenation back in the clubhouse, you know, for this final home stretch?
Oh, that's huge. I mean, I would imagine it's what it feels like when a contending major league team makes a trade at the deadline and such talent arrives where it sort of energizes everybody around the club. And that's just huge. It's funny, at the beginning of the series, I was talking to Connor Scott. We chatted for a few minutes for a pregame show interview. And he was just like, yeah, like, you know, we're in the dog days here. Like, you got to find a way to flush bad days and flush good days exactly the same way so that you can come back with good, high quality energy the next day and attack with your best stuff. And, you know, I think it's sort of hard to do that in general. You know, these guys have been going every day for, this is month five for them. So I think, you know, getting some kind of external energy boost was pretty significant. And who knows, maybe it'll turn into a significant run for the team. It'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's not, they're still within striking distance. They're 7.5 games back of Erie here with about 6 weeks left to play. So they're still within striking distance. All it takes is a really good series for the most part, because they're playing the same team 6 games in a row. So something has to give there. So do you think that they can make a run here?
Absolutely. And I only say that because the three teams that are in front of Altoona, Bowie, Erie, and Akron, all have, you know, we still play them for a full week each. You know, so you have a chance to sort of climb the mountain, if you will, by climbing over the teams that are in front of you. You know, Harrisburg is going to play this week. They're a team that's sort of at the bottom of the standings, but they're better, right? Like, they're going to get a couple of prospects, I would imagine, from the Juan Soto deal. And then, you know, we go to Bowie next week, where there's a pretty sour taste in the team's mouth from that experience there at the end of July, where we lost 5 out of 6 in the first 3 days of the series. You know, Bowie scored something like 11, 12, 13 runs in a row in the first 3 games of the series. So I think there will be a little bit of a revenge element when we go back to Bowie. And then, you know, after that, you still have a series with Akron at home, and then you go to Erie. So you have a chance. And then you finish the year with Reading. I mean, I think that's the other factor here, right? Like, the two teams that Altoona plays that aren't in front of them in the playoffs are two teams that are at the bottom of the overall standings, Harrisburg and Reading. So I think I think there's a pretty good chance, actually, especially now that the starting pitching's threw a little bit better last week in Binghamton. You know, if they can put together another week like that on the mound, this is going to be a tough group to beat.
And that group's about to get a little bit stronger with the return of Henry Davis. Obviously, still, I think, a little bit away from rejoining the team, finally hitting. But do you expect him to be with the team the last few weeks of the season?
Yeah, I think that's the hope. you know, it's unfortunate that Henry's wrist has sort of been how it has been this year, because it really felt like he was just starting to turn the corner. We were finishing that series in New Hampshire. You know, he had three straight multi-hit games, couple home runs, and, you know, had a go-ahead double on the last day of the series in the ninth inning. You know, where it was one of the first times that I was saying to myself, oh, this is Henry Davis. This is what it looks like. Okay, let's do it. But, you know, unfortunately the injury cropped back up for him, which, you know, is just, it just sucks for him. I feel really bad for him that the way his season has gone has spent so much time on the IL, because these are reps, that he needs. You know, he's 22, going to be 23 next year. You know, this is the appropriate level for him to play at. And, you know, I'm sure it's been, really eating away at him to not be around the guys.
Right. And you know, that's hard. The rehab process is tough, not just physically, but it's a mental game too, because you can only control so much. And as somebody that wants to go out and perform every day to the best of your abilities, when you're physically limited, that really takes away and takes a toll and eats at you when you're trying to get back. And obviously, he came to Altoona hurt and then gets re-injured and, you know, is a ball magnet, of course. And, you know, when you go through that, that's got to be tough for a young player like that.
Yeah. I mean, I have tried to put myself in his shoes where, you know, you get to double A for the first time and you only get to play, you know, you play two games and then, you know, then you have to go on the IL and then you come back and you play a handful of games and you have some success, but not a ton. And you go back on the injured list. I think this is a really good opportunity for mental growth for any player, right? Like when you're going through this sort of long-term or what feels like a long-term rehab process, you know, I think that that's something that every player experiences at some point in their career. And, you know, I think there is actually a lot of growth and, you know, positive elements that Nick and that Henry and somebody like Matt Gorski can probably learn about, you know, sort of how to treat time when you're away from the team doing rehab. You know, I just think it's a lesson that will only serve them well down the road because, you know, this is the nature of baseball, right? Like your body isn't always going to agree with you. Sometimes it's going to betray you.
Right. And I think it's very hard to understand when you're 20, 22, 24 years old, right? You're playing every day, you're playing 100 and some odd games and there's just a grind. Like the grind is real and it's just tough to go out there and perform every day. Now, obviously, you know, I think one of the records all time that I don't think is ever going to get sniffed again is Kyle Ripken's consecutive game streak. And the reason why is because now everybody monitors that. You're not going to get players that play that many times in a row, that many games in a row. You'd have to have a special type of player and a special type of organization that would even remotely consider that. Everything is tracked from mechanics, from movements. Every movement they make, it seems like that's tracked. And is that type of micromanagement good for the team moving forward and good for these organizations? Or is there value still in just getting out there and playing the game?
Yeah, it's an interesting thought. You know, I would say that when your body is tired, that you're more likely to get hurt. I think that's where sort of the basis of some of the, elements around giving guys rest days comes from, that when, you know, your muscles are tired, that they don't fire in the same way and you're at risk to tear a tendon in an elbow or in a knee or in an ankle. And, you know, you're less likely to do that when you garner more rest. I mean, I think you're right on the money that we're never going to see somebody play 6,000 consecutive games or whatever the number was, whatever the final number. I think it was, what was it, 6,131 was the final number for Cal? I think that's what it was.
I think that's very well could be it. But, yeah, I don't think they're going to get close to 130. Man.
Yeah, like that is insanity to consider, right? Like that's... It's like 15, what was it, 15 straight years? Like I can't even fathom that, doing that, playing every single day for 162 games times 15 years or 12 years, whatever it ended up being. That is unbelievable to me. Like, I still can't believe that I watched that ceremony when I was a kid, when he broke the record. You know, I still can't believe that that streak actually happened. You know, just with all the freak stuff that happens in baseball, hit by pitches, takeout slides, you know, you turn an ankle, you know, trying to field a ball, trying to field an awkwardly hit ball in the outfield or something like that. Like, there's so many random little freak things that happen all the time in baseball. And for him to not miss a single game, I still don't know how that happened.
Yeah. And before we get into the third and final segment with John here, you know, 21-31 was Gehrig's record, or I'm sorry, was the, what was he played in the record breaking 21-31 games. And then he ended with, and not only, it didn't stop there, ended with 2,632 consecutive games. That is, to me, a record that isn't going to be sniffed. And you mentioned being kids for that, right? And it's, and that's back when, you know, guys played 162 games a year, and that was the norm. Now, if you have a player like that, they're very much an outlier, for good, bad, or in different reasons. But now there's so much money involved in the game that it's very difficult to put all that money into a player and then have them spend a multitude of time on the IL or not able to play.
Right. I mean, I completely understand, you know, especially now that we have learned so much more about how bodies work and, you know, that, you know, how athletic trainers can give you more concise information about injuries and recovery. And, you know, it's great that we have embraced so much more science when it comes to this stuff.
Right. So we're going to embrace heading into this break and coming back for the third and final segment here on the Young Bucks podcast, the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network.
Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Welcome back to the third and final segment of the Young Bucks podcast. We always thank John Moses for joining us. He's a big friend of the show. I'm sure he listens to Corey and I all the time, especially on long road trips. And even if he doesn't, that's a shame for him, because obviously we have a lot of fun on this podcast. So let's take a look at the standings, right? We talked about the curve possibly making a run, but what's unique in the Eastern League is that they have a set of first half winners and a set of second half winners. And when you look at the first half winners, you look at the standings a little differently, because it's bizarre to me, because you look at the Richmond Flying Squirrels, they won the first half and they are in the basement of not just the division, but the league now in the second half. So that is kind of what's crazy about the setup as far as the schedule goes.
Yeah. You know, I think split schedules happened for a long time in the minors, though. It's like generally new to me and to the Eastern League. You know, the Eastern League did it for the first time in 2019. And then we didn't do it last year. You know, they just did two best overall records for the year, play a playoff series. Yeah, it is a little strange, but it also gives teams that were good in the first half of the year before promotions, which in Richmond's case, you know, obviously has happened. It gives teams a chance to have some accomplishment for the year. in that, you know, Richmond obviously played great in the first half of the season. Akron did too. You know, those groups were definitely worthy of playoff berths. Now, of course, the season's going to be, you know, the teams are different. You know, Akron's already lost George Valera. He's gone to AAA. They've lost several pitchers in the second half. Xavion Curry, who made his big league debut tonight, I think. Hunter Gaddis has gone up to AAA and to the big leagues already. Logan Allen. You know, the makeup of the teams are generally far different. Like, there's a significant amount of changes to every minor league roster around the halfway point of the season. That's usually when organizations feel comfortable making some decisions on players about whether they're going to promote or demote or, you know, change their role, whatever. You know, once you've got sort of 60 to 70 games, a lot of organizations feel like they can make choices. So it's a little strange how the standings sort of shake out every year, but it's because the general makeup of every team changes significantly in July and August.
Right. I think, you know, for the curve's sake, like I said, like we mentioned before, they're 7.5 games back entering play on Tuesday, and they're getting stronger and stronger, what seems like by the day. So that obviously bodes well for them. But, you know, a lot of things can happen. And obviously with the team getting stronger, with Henry Davis possibly coming back, you know, Nick Gonzalez, Lulu Sanchez, you know, they also could lose some guys. And are there any guys that you can think of off the top of your head that there might be in line for a promotion that maybe are under the radar or that you're really not thinking of right now?
You know, guys that have been with us all year that have generally played well all season, I think, include Blake Sable, J.C. Flowers, Tanaj Thomas. You know, I don't think it's that crazy if, say, a Kyle Nicholas rips off 4 or 5 straight pretty good starts that they just move him up. Yeah, there. I mean, Andres Alvarez, I think, is another guy that could probably might move. I don't know. Obviously, Jared Triolo's been really has sort of gotten better as the year has gone on. So I think those are sort of the names that come to mind for me first. Maybe, you know, I think a Colin Selby, is another guy that could sort of find his way to AAA at some point before the end of the year. So we'll see. You know, my observation is that the Pirates like to keep groups of players together like they did last year with the Castro, Martin, Smith and Jigba, Cal Mitchell, Rowanzi Contreras, Beto, right? Like all those guys that were with the group last year. You know, they only promoted guys when it was exceedingly obvious that they needed to go up to AAA or to the big leagues. And that's my general sense of what they'll do with this group and that they have with groups. But like, you know, players dictate decisions in the long run, right? I don't think anyone would have said at the beginning of the season that Andy Rodriguez by August 15th would have played 5 games in Altoona and that was likely going to be here for the end of the year. You know, so I think, you know, players sort of prove it to you as the year goes on.
Right. And I think, you know, obviously there's value in performances, right? And I think that's the important thing here to realize, because Rodriguez played his way up to this level. And obviously Henry Davis, I think it could be a different situation if Henry Davis stays healthy. He could still be very well in Greensboro. Now, obviously that's just pure speculation, but at the same time, when you're busting down the door, it's hard to say no. And I think, you know, Rodriguez deserved a promotion. He got the promotion. And now, you know, you look at the schedule and he's going to be a significant factor for the curve moving forward for the next 6 weeks. And I think that's, you know, there's value in that. And I think that there might be a couple more guys that have that opportunity. I know last year, the mass promotion at the end of the season, because the seasons were kind of staggered, whereas, you know, AAA mirrors the major league schedule, AA obviously doesn't. So you saw that entire group up for the last bit of the season, and there's value in that because the best way to evaluate is game situation.
Absolutely. And while we're talking here, I'm going to look to see if Indy goes much longer than we do this year. Last year, you know, they added on those 10 games at the end of the season, which, you know, obviously turned out to be a good player development opportunity, right? Like a lot of guys from Altoona, but also a lot of guys from this group that were finishing the year in Greensboro last year got extra games at the end of the season. Indy goes for an extra 10 days, it looks like. Yeah, so there's, you know, about 10 more games. Indy's final scheduled game looks like is the 28th of September. So, you know, there could be the same kind of thing where if Altoona doesn't make the playoffs this year, that there's a handful of guys that end up in Indianapolis to finish the year.
Yeah, obviously, you know, it's very weird because Corey and I talk about this all the time. We see the record and we see that it might not be as successful as some might think it should be or could be or whatever. But there's so much more that meets the eye when it comes to records and performances and just the way that the games play out and performances play out for minor league players. Because, yeah, at the major league level, you know, outside of Pittsburgh, typically things are valued in wins. But here, you know, it just goes a lot deeper than putting wins in the win column. Not saying that wins aren't important because they are, but there's just a lot more value in some of the other things that people aren't recognizing maybe throughout the course of this season.
Yeah. And, you know, Kyron Madison and I talked about this definitely earlier in the year about how when you get to this level at AA, that the talent level is actually closer. So it becomes much more about what's going on between the ears. You know, how do you think along with situations and games? How quickly are you thinking on your feet? And that mental element he observes is much more of a factor at this level and what sets players apart from each other. So, you know, I think the best way to develop your mental acuity in how you think during a game and how you think along with the game or with a pitcher in an at bat, that happens through repetition and doing it against guys that are equal or above your talent level, which I think a lot of players are sort of faced with at this level. So, you know, that's why the repetitions at this level I observe as being very important, right? And that's why I'm so disappointed that Nick Gonzalez has missed so much time this year. Henry Davis has missed so much time this year. Matt Gorski's missed such important time this year. You know, these are highly important development reps for all these guys. You just can't replace the experience of playing at this level.
No, and I think that's a very good way to look at it. So, John, for those of our listeners that want to catch a Curve game and can't get out to Altoona, where can they find the broadcasts for Curve games, and where can they listen to your voice tell the story of the game?
Well, yeah, you can just log on to our website, altoonacurve.com. Whenever a game's going on, usually on the top of the page, there's a listen live link. Highly, highly encourage you to listen for free through that. Or, you know, pay for Minor League Baseball TV. There's a promo code. If you use the word Curve as your promotional code, you'll get a few dollars off. And frankly, if you like to watch Minor League Baseball, you should just buy the Minor League package. It's really not, I think it's like $50 for the whole year if you buy it in April. And you get 5,000 games. You get every team across the country. You get them on demand. I would say definitely watch the minor league streams. You know, sometimes the camera angles are what they are, and you know, it's that kind of thing. But it's fun. I mean, we tell the whole stories of games, and I think it's a lot of fun. And I'm sure there are people that listen to you and Corey together on this podcast that have checked in on us. And if you're listening, feel free to let us know. Drop me and Preston an email during games, or you know, if you happen to have a thought about a topic that we're talking about, because sometimes we get off topic about how Preston's, you know, like 19 years old. And, you know, if you have a thought about that kind of stuff, and you want to interact in the conversation, come find us.
Now, he's mentioning Preston Shoemaker, his play-by-play or his color guy on the air. He is a young pup just about to graduate from college. So obviously is the youngest person in the press box by a few years. He obviously gets not a gentle ribbing, but quite a significant ribbing outside of some of the other people in their Altoona Curve press box, because for the most part, we've been there for longer than John has been around. So he inherited quite a press box in Altoona, and it's got a name throughout the Eastern League as far as one of the more lively or entertaining press boxes in all of minor league baseball.
Oh yeah, that's real. You know, Preston had never seen the movie Top Gun, which I thought was a little bit of a red flag when we had a Top Gun night last year. But we are doing our best to educate Holidaysburg's own Preston Shoemaker. By the way, Hollidaysburg Little League, man. That's awesome.
That's right. Yes. For those that listening, the local Little League team, Hollidaysburg, will be playing in Williamsport, the Little League World Series. They're the Mid-Atlantic region champs. So shout out to those guys. And we wish them the best of luck. So we're going to sign off with that. So best of luck to the Hollidaysburg Little League team. I think their first game is Thursday at 7. Tune into ESPN to watch those guys, support those kids, because this is going to be one of the most, I think, you know, life-changing experiences that they're going to experience in their short lives. So best of luck to those guys. And we thank John Moses for joining us on the Young Bucks podcast and DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcasting Network. We'll catch you again next week where Corey will be back, and maybe we'll have some campfire stories for this podcast. So thank you as always for listening. We'll catch you again next week.